or two.
All right. Call the meeting back to order. We're under unfinished business. First item is ordinance 2014-08, an ordinance providing for Chapter 4.60 of the Municipal Code, Parks and Recreation User Fees, and updating current language to reflect borough incorporation. I'd entertain a motion to adopt this ordinance in its third and final reading.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved by Member Haverlick, seconded by Member Strand to adopt ordinance 2014-08 in its third and final reading. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, will the clerk call the roll?
Mark.
Yes.
Cindy.
Yes.
Bob.
Yes.
Nancy.
Yes.
Kirk.
Yes.
John.
Yes.
Jay.
Yes.
Okay, ordinance 2014-08 passes unanimously in its third and final reading. That brings us up to item B. It's ordinance 2014-09, an ordinance providing for Chapter 13.12, camping in recreation areas of the Municipal Code and updating current language to reflect borough incorporation. I would entertain a motion to adopt this ordinance in its third and final reading.
So moved. I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved by Member Haverlick, seconded by Member Logadakis to adopt ordinance 2014-09 in its third and final reading. Any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk call the roll.
Nancy.
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Cindy?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
And John?
Yes.
Okay, that ordinance also passes unanimously in its third and final reading. Next item is C, and it's ordinance 2014-10, an ordinance adopting the budget and setting the millage rates for the fiscal year July 1st, 2014 through June 30th, 2015, as amended on May 5th. I'd entertain a motion to adopt this ordinance in its third and final reading.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved by Member Haverlick, seconded by Member Walhooter to adopt ordinance 2014-10. Discussion. John?
Yeah, I'm still opposed to this just because our spending equals all the things, all the money we're bringing in. And I do think there are places we can cut back. We're have a budget of wants rather than what we need. And as John Hogue brought up earlier today, we're not putting anything aside for the police department, which we need desperately, and the other $20 million worth of projects that we have on our list, including the hospital, which is, we may not only lose funding from the police department, but also the hospital, because we don't have up-to-date facilities or even safe facilities in some cases. And I do think there's places to cut back. You know, I mentioned the school before, to go back to 1.6. We were giving 1.8 and have been for several years. And that's when we had 750 kids. Now we have 425. Yeah, I think people can cut back. Just one salary package would cut $200,000 and have no impact on education. We're giving 85 to mental health, and there's no paperwork on any of that. We don't know what we're really paying for. These are only a couple. Everyone's doing, the schools are doing a beautiful job, and the department heads are very responsible. I don't have any complaints. It's just I don't think we're putting any monies away for what we know we need, not just what we think we need, but we know we need several million dollars, and we should be at least putting away $1 million a year. The state, I don't believe, as John said, is going to come up with monies. Maybe they'll come up with matching monies, but we don't have anything to match with. So I'm just very concerned about those things. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments on ordinance 2014-10? Okay, seeing none, will the clerk call the roll?
Kurt.
Yes.
Mark.
Yes.
Nancy.
Yes.
John.
No.
Cindy.
Yes.
Bob.
Yes.
And Jay.
Yes.
Okay, ordinance 2014-10 passes in its third and final reading, 6-1 vote, with Member Haverlick voting against it. Ordinances for second reading. First one, Item D is an ordinance 2014-11, an ordinance placing the question of exemption from the Alaska Public Officials Financial Disclosure Law on the October 7th, 2014 municipal election ballot. I'd entertain a motion to adopt this ordinance in its second reading.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. The motion's been made by Member Walhooter, seconded by Member Strand to adopt ordinance 2014-11. Discussion.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes?
This is Cindy.
Yeah.
The only thing I want to add to this is that we have also heard from the public asking that this be placed on the ballot.
Yes, yeah, so I've had people think it's a good idea as well, so that's a good point to make. One thing I've asked the clerk to do is check into it at some point before it gets to the, if it, you know, passes the third reading and gets on the ballot, to get the clarification whether you have to file this paperwork before the election when you become a candidate or 30 days after you're elected. I believe it's the 30 days after you're elected, so it might, and we'll get a clarification on that and hopefully get more people to participate in this process. So, any other comments or discussion? The clerk call the roll.
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Cindy?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
And John?
Yes.
Okay. Ordinance 2014-11 passes unanimously in its second reading. That brings us up to an authorization to issue a request for proposals to aid the community in developing a borough comprehensive plan. At the May 19th meeting, I requested this item be revisited by the Assembly. So I'd entertain a motion to give the manager permission to authorize a RFP for this subject.
So moved.
Second. It's been moved by Member Strand, seconded by Member Walhooter to authorize this RFP for developing the Borough Comprehensive Plan. Discussion. Nancy?
I have a question. This is, or just for clarification, this is to request proposal from someone who will guide a local committee who's going to design the comprehensive plan, or is this someone's going to write the comprehensive plan?
That is up to the Assembly at this point, but I could let the manager talk to this. I mean, Steve's the one that gave us the recommendation how to proceed.
So. I can speak to it. Generally, what you do is you hire a facilitator to help guide us using public input and local expertise to actually build the plan. That being said, the format of the plan, you know, you generally look for an expert to help you. This is the best way to organize it. This is the best way to present it. But the data that goes into it generally comes from the community itself and our local, you know, experts in whatever field it happens to be we're talking about. Did I answer the question?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. More discussion? Bob?
Well, I voted against it the last time, and I've been stopped on the street a number of times asking why I did that. And I've read that RFP numerous times and studied it. And I've got about five problems with it, and I would vote again no unless we make some changes. And here's my problems with it. First of all, there's a section in there that talks about the land selection committee. We have a land selection committee, but essentially the way I read that is this takes over the role of the land selection committee. In other words, where this consultant comes in, asks people what we think we ought to do, and then that goes to the committee. And or it serves, the way I read it, this consultant serves to the committee. And I think that could be much better done locally. I think we know what we have. I think we have the resources in the staff. I think we could do it. Or if we needed to hire somebody from the community, I think there's quite a few people around here that could do that job. I'd like to see the money stay in the community rather than go out that one piece.
Mr. Mayor, may I?
You may.
Is it easier for you in the Assembly for me to, or Liz and I, to answer these questions
one by one, if that's okay.
Probably would be.
On the land selection thing, I mean, and sorry that you read it that way. Maybe we could tweak some language. What that's meant is part of a comp, comprehensive plan is also is a big part of his land use. And one of the things that they do is they you basically analyze the amount of land you have and what how it's currently coded. So much industrial, so much commercial, so much residential, and so forth. And when you finish that evaluation, you come up with a list that says, you know, and some of it's intuitive, but you're short on, I mean, we'll use an issue that's recently, we're short on commercial property. So you would expect the comp plan to include, it appears from talking to local people and evaluating your local economy and your local land use rules, that you need X number of acres more of commercial property, let's say. What is in the RFP, what was meant to be in the RFP, was to say, on the land selection side, we might want to hold off selecting land, since the state doesn't really put a hard, fast deadline on that, until we actually get the comp plan done, so that the data from that could be used to help the land selection committee make those recommendations to the assembly. That's really where I was headed with it. We could tweak the language, but the idea was a planner facilitator is going to come back with a bunch of data that's going to say you need, you know, or you're showing a detriment of 500 acres of commercial property. You might want to consider either zoning more commercial property or finding more land and making it commercial. So.
But your language in there says, assist the land selection committee and public to prioritize municipal land entitlement selections and recommended zoning.
Agreed. I mean, and that's,
I think
that's
that
maybe we might be saying the same thing. Assist them in prioritizing what land they should be choosing.
Then what purpose does our land selection committee serve then?
Mr. Mayor?
Yes, Cindy?
As I'm looking at that section, there's a couple things that stand out to me. It says assist, not be the driver, the land selection committee and the public. And I think the most important two words are at the end of the sentence, and that is if appropriate. So I think they've addressed your concerns in the RFP.
Bob?
Go ahead. I'll let us move on here because I want to come back to it on a different point here. But go ahead.
Okay. Any other discussion on this, John?
I agree with Bob on many of his points, especially keeping it local. I went through our comprehensive plan from 2000, and I had even forgot it existed, and called four boroughs in Alaska and asked them. You know, assembly people, mayors, if they had a comprehensive plan and how often they refer to it in their meetings. And the answer is pretty much zero. And looking downstairs, there's like 10 cases of these in unopened boxes of our 2000 plan. So, and honestly, I don't remember referring to it. The other thing is with Liz with PDC, I mean, over the last 10 years with Eric Phillips and Liz, you know, I think they know the economy better than anyone we could ever bring in. GLOW and the Harbor Committee, I mean, they're phenomenal. You know, and I'm not opposed to bringing specialists into a system on specific points, but also in, I think we have our best talent here. And going through this, the first, at least quarter of it, is the history of Petersburg and census data. Two-thirds of it are maps. And then there's a small, maybe quarter left. I'm getting my fractions off here. So quarter, two quarters, and then last quarter are just suggestions from the surveys that were turned in and sort of a compilation of data. And a word processing person could easily handle that. The thing that I'm worried about is, you know, we've got talking 300,000 for this. That would be with this about $10,000 a page of data that would come from some supervisor, consultant, facilitator, whatever. That seems kind of spendy to me. The other thing is, for 300,000, that's a heck of a lot we could put into our police station, the hospital, schools. You know, I just have a hard time going with this.
Okay, yeah, any other comments? Jay?
All right, Bob?
Spoke.
Okay, thank you.
Facilitator.
I have a question for the city manager, if I may. Is the number Assemblyman Haverlick used was around $300,000. Is that a reasonable expectation?
I'm going to answer it two ways.
Yeah, ballpark.
Okay. I have no idea what it's going to cost is the first answer.
Fair enough.
And $300,000 wouldn't surprise me in the least. Okay. I mean, so it's one of the reasons you do an RFP process rather than a bid is to try to get proposals to then figure out what you can afford and what you want to do.
Sure.
To kind of expand.
Please.
Assemblymember Haverlick talked about the first part of the plan. One of the things we've been doing internally is having department heads go through their section of the existing comp plan and make updates and changes to exactly avoid that. That's part of when you get into this, we get to the point of saying, and we want you to don't worry about this because we're capable of doing that, but we do need your help with. And that's one of those conversations that's really hard to put in an RFP. It's much more when you start to talk to somebody and you say, okay, you start off by allowing them to do some research of their own, and then they come back and say, this is what we're seeing. How does that fit with what you know of your own community? And then you start to go from there and say, you know what, it sounds like we really want you to head in this direction or go look at this. So unfortunately, it's why it's as vague as it is it's really hard to know. We know that internally, as John said, we've got some really good experts here on just raw numbers. But, I mean, we'll talk about the harbor for a minute. I can't answer what the growing trend in harbors are. Glow and her staff probably can, but they may not know what's going on in harbors in other parts of the world that may have some similarities to us, and that's where the expertise you'd hope some of these folks could bring in and say, you know what, we're seeing this in a lot more harbors in other places. You might want to consider that. Stuff that would be outside our realm of experience. I'd also like to allow, Chris, Susan, or Liz to chime in on any of this. If you guys add anything to what I just said or want to.
Yeah, please do.
I'm trying to be, I don't want to.
Well, that's fine.
No, yeah. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor. Liz is going to say something, Cindy, then we'll.
Sure.
Okay, we'll let you talk right after that.
Liz Cabrera with the Economic Development Council, and at risk of complicating it further, I'm hoping to provide a clearer example. When you read, I wouldn't use our existing comprehensive plan as the standard bearer of what a comprehensive plan can be and should be for us. So one of the reasons that I'm excited about doing a comprehensive plan is because I'd like a plan that we could actually use. The one that we have, I don't think is particularly useful. And I'll give you an example. When you read it, there should be a section on housing, for instance. And one of the recommendations is do a housing plan. Well, geez, thanks. That's really useful for us. Not really. But, in my work, I hear from employers who say, and individuals who say that they have a hard time finding housing for their employees. They have a hard time finding, especially rental housing, that's affordable for people who are entry level in our community. So is that holding back business expansion? Well, that's a really good question. So I hear anecdotally from individuals that maybe it's an issue, but community-wide, is it an issue? And that's what someone could help us figure out. And also, what would the community accept as far as doing something about it? So having a blanket statement, liberal general statement, like do a housing plan is not particularly useful. And that's why you see specific elements in that RFP. And that's where we've looked at that old comprehensive plan and seen, well, here's an issue, but they didn't really do a very good job in it. And so we tried to specify certain areas that we thought would be particularly useful for us moving forward. And that's why it's written the way it's written. So hopefully that offers some more insight.
Any questions of Liz while she's there?
Yeah, one please.
Okay.
So how would the comprehensive plan help to solve the housing problem?
Well, ideally, in my vision of it, you would get input from the public. We would also be able to get like a vacancy rate. We would get a look at, you could do like a windshield tour and say, you know, we have issues of substandard housing in certain areas that really need to be addressed, and get a sense from the public, like, is this an issue really in town? Would you be willing to have additional land be put up by the borough for private development? If private developers didn't come forward, would you be willing to have additional public housing or federally assisted public housing in our community? You know, what income level is having having trouble finding rental housing? And so, you know, at what point does the borough step in and get involved in this issue? Is it that big an issue, or is it something that people in town would prefer to just leave up to private developers?
That answer your question?
Yes. Thank you.
John,
sure.
You have a question too?
Either be for you, Liz, or Steve. Have you ever seen a comprehensive plan that, like, if they say this does cost us $300, that would show us... $300,000, sorry.
I wish.
That focused on how, now that we're a borough, we could combine resources, people, jobs, to where we could save at least $300,000, at least pay for this plan. I mean, have you seen plans that direct communities in how to save monies?
To be more efficient, I guess you could put that in there, but I haven't seen one that specifically addressed that. Not having read, you know, the whole population of comprehensive plans.
But right, but it seems that, you know, that way we, you know, at least get, you know, we pay for the plan through savings.
But you do know that we're not going to be spending general fund money on the plan, right?
But what if monies come into general funds because of the plan?
Well, would that be a great thing?
Yeah. That's
fine. Okay, thanks, Liz. You have a question? One more. You're not done, Liz. One more question of Liz, Cindy, and then we'll...
Okay.
Thank you.
I can wait if Cindy wants to go.
Okay, because you're done in 25 minutes. Is that right, Cindy? Go ahead, Cindy.
The only thing I wanted to point out, and maybe it's the cause of some of the confusion, is that the RFP doesn't specifically state, and I think this is the goal, that we want the contractor to be the facilitator and synthesizer of information. And I'm wondering if it would help folks to be more comfortable with this process if that language was added to the RFP overall, so that folks realize that it can't go forward without public input and without input from our borough departments. But we've heard from the Land Selection Committee, they've said very clearly they need a comprehensive plan before they feel they can go forward with land selection. We've heard from PEDC that this would be a valuable tool, and just having been involved in comprehensive plans in the past in other areas, it's definitely something that Petersburg needs to move forward.
Okay. Kurt,
so,
you had?
So I'll just tag on to the end of that one and say it wouldn't have to cost us $300,000 to do that, would it, if we were more involved in it? So we won't know any of these numbers until we get an RFP out there and let them know, okay, so if we want A, then that's what this package is going to be, and B is going to cost this package and so forth. So I think we probably need to move ahead on this, at least in my own personal opinion, so that we can see what our costs will be. So,
is there a question in there?
I agree with
is that an accurate statement?
I think so, yeah.
That was my question. Okay. That would be an accurate statement if we said that. Yeah, I mean, would that price vary depending on what we
what was in there, obviously, yeah.
That answer your question, Kurt? I guess so.
As clear as it's ever going
to
be.
Nancy?
Is this RFP going to be sent to anybody locally?
I can jump in, Liz.
Sure.
Thanks, Liz. Our normal process is to publish it on the website.
I see.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm not aware of the expertise on this island for this, but... I mean, if somebody happens to be here and wanted to bid on it, we would definitely take that into account. Generally, for this kind of an action, and Bob, I'm jumping ahead on one of your questions about, you know, the issue of differing expertise. A community as complex as Petersburg is going to involve somebody maybe driving or facilitating it. And there'll there's the likelihood of it being of other pieces and parts being subcontracted is pretty high. Meaning, we start talking about harbor infrastructure, you're not going to find too many planners that know much about it, so they're going to end up most likely working with the Harbor Board, GLO, and maybe even an outside engineering firm to do those kind of evaluations. I'm guessing. I mean, I suppose we could come across somebody that really knows all of it, but you end up with a lot of expertise being brought in by whoever you choose. And if it's set up like it is today, you're going to one person and you're saying, it's your job to figure this out, what experts you need.
Any, Bob, do you have another point? I know you have a couple more, so we better
maybe just get to them. My third one, you're a good help
there. Sorry, trying to.
My third one had to do with, I asked early on when this first brought up that we prioritize really what we wanted out of this, because I believe the costs of this are going to be at least $300,000 or higher. We didn't do that. We come forward with all these things. As a minimum, I think we need to readjust this in such that we prioritize it to what we really want and allow the potential bidder to put some costs on it so we can have some choices. Otherwise, we're going to sit here as a group, I believe, and it's going to be an all or nothing issue. And I really think that we need to, you know, put some details, or, you know, for at least from the assembly standpoint, prioritize what the first, second, third things we want out of this. And then allow Steve to put out the RFP accordingly. Then my next point is that I've got quite a bit of contracting experience, and I think we would be smarter to put out an RFP such that it would allow a potential bidder to bid on one or all the parts, rather than to have just one contractor take over the whole thing. Because normally what happens is that when you bring in subcontractors, and this thing has at least three sets of different expertise as I see it. There's engineering expertise, there's community planning expertise, there's all kinds, and I think Liz would agree with that. And if you have a couple companies that want to bid on it, let them bid on one or all of it. And that way, maybe we can keep some of the costs down. At least we can have a chance then also to look at one of the points that I think Steve raised. And that had to do with somebody that could, we're looking for somebody that can really facilitate, you know, some very conflicting views on this thing. So I just think it needs to be reorganized and some priorities set on that, my point on that.
Steve, do you have a comment on that?
Liz, I mean, I'm sorry, I'm going back and forth with Liz. And Susan and Chris, feel free to jump in if you, no. My opinion is that it's exceptionally complex.
It is complex.
Project. We bounced this. I guarantee you. At one point in time, we had this separate. We had the harbor portion separate than the comp plan. We ended up kind of deciding to put it all together for an ease of operation and hope that it would all be integrated well, rather than having separate plans and then having to integrate it later. And that's kind of, we ended up with that document the way it is today. It could be done separate. It could be done in five different pieces. The question is, at the end, how do you integrate it back in? And if there's not some one group right from day one watching that, do you end up with an integrated document? You know, talk about land use, which is the most contentious. You know, many of you in this room will start to weigh in on that. You know, land use and zoning becomes a massively huge issue. You know, Dave kind of brought it up earlier. You know, the borough could elect to put land use restrictions out the road, but our charter says we're not going to do that. We're going to leave that up to people who live out the road. See, you get into this some divisive or complex issues about trying to decide, we're going to allow that to be timber harvested or we're not? Are you going to say that's forest parkland or is it commercial? When you get into that stuff, and then the harbor wants it for harbor development along them, you start to need somebody that can coordinate all of that really well, or at least coordinate the conversations. And that's That's the tough part. If you do it separately, is that going to be integrated, and how do you do that? And I don't have an answer. Liz, can you?
Yeah, the only thing I would add is we did talk about doing it separately, but then we thought, well, there might be some overlap here where you have one public meeting and maybe a variety of issues come up, and then if you have the same contractor, you don't have to have another public meeting for another subject. You know, you can kind of be more efficient in the comments that you're receiving. So maybe there's a harbor meeting, but some of the waterfront development issues come up at that meeting. Well, the contractor's there making note and putting that into that waterfront land development portion of it, as opposed to having to have a whole separate meeting about just waterfront development. So that, you know, that was actually our attempt at trying to be more efficient and save some money. But either way,
it doesn't have to be that way, it is kind of the point. So that's up to the assembly.
So it appears like we need to come up with
I just have one comment as a department head for probably your biggest facility here on our own. We are not part of the comprehensive plan. It was completely left out because it was such a big animal, I believe, when we did the last comprehensive plan. And I'm just here desperately pleading with you to move forward with the RFP process. We need this so bad. The last comprehensive look we had at our harbors, which we use daily for grant funding, for doing battle with the state on all sorts of things, was done in 1996, a look at our facility. So it's forever ago. And I just really, really plead with you to move forward on this process, get the ball going. Doesn't say you have to accept it. It just says we're starting this ball. So thanks for that.
Thanks, Glow. May I ask a question of Glow?
Yeah.
In short, what would this provide you as a department head of, really the most high-use facility, the harbor? What would this comprehensive plan do for you?
Well, there's two different aspects of it. Part of it is an inventory of what we have, and they go through and they check every single aspect of the facility that we own. That's one very valuable piece when you go and start asking for money to rebuild things or get put on state lists for construction. But the other really important part of it is that every time I come to you as a board or as assembly, it's not GLOW's idea. It has been something that has been brought up for sometimes decades and has been planned for, things that require so much time and energy to plan new harbors, identify land uses for future projects in the harbor and on our waterfront, which we're not making any more waterfront. It doesn't just become my idea or the current management's idea. It becomes something that the public has been able to look at and planned for many, many years. And I think that's probably the most valuable aspect of it, that when the Harbor Board comes to you with something, they can say, see, there's a document that has been vetted by people prior to us now that says that this has been something on our radar for years.
Thank you.
Did that answer?
Yeah. Absolutely. Thank you, Glow.
Thanks, Glow. Seems like if we want to change the way this RFP is going to be presented when it's sent out, we need to make some amendments to it or get a group of people, a couple from the assemblies, with the manager, bring it back to us again if we're not going to agree with this, or either that or sit here right now and go through and amend what we don't like. And if we can get agreement from the assembly, then it'll be a done deal. Otherwise, I could see it taking a while.
I'd make a motion that we amend it along the lines of what Cindy suggested, that we use them as facilitation and spell out specifically, you know, what we want. We want them as a facilitator, and then what do we want then as a document? Do we want a document from them, or are we going to do an internal document? I guess that's the other question I'd have as part of that motion. I don't know. Cindy, what was your thought?
Are you here?
I had to get it off mute. I would assume that the contractor would also be doing a synthesis of the information that the public provides and that the borough department heads provide.
And so they would provide a document back accordingly with that? Is that your thinking?
That would be the author of the document using the information they garner from the borough and from the public.
Okay. I would make a motion to that we amend it to do, you know, what, just exactly what we were talking about or what Cindy's talking about.
Do you have that in some kind of written out, Kathy, where you could read it to what?
Yeah, to amend the RFP request to put the emphasis on facilitation and to provide a document based on comments made by the borough and the public.
Yeah.
And we'll keep the same list of, you know, like from harbor master plan, zoning, municipal land selection, housing, waterfront, all of that wording will stay the same. Is there a second for that motion?
I'll second.
Okay. I won't repeat it, but we've all heard what Kathy just read, and the motion's been made by Assemblymember Lynn, seconded by Member Lagadakis to amend the RFP and have the manager send it out. Any discussion on the amendment? Jay?
Yes, please. I can't find the exact wording right now. How is that wording differently? How is that worded differently than it was 30 seconds ago? What's the difference here?
There is no language, Mr. Mayor, I'm sorry.
That's
there
fine.
There is no language in the current RFP that describes that the contractor will be the facilitator of the process and that they will synthesize the information gathered from the public meetings and other mapping efforts and other efforts.
Yeah, I would concur with what Cindy said.
Roger, does that make sense, Jay?
That explains why I could not find the information. Thank you.
Okay, it wasn't there. All right.
Yep.
Okay, any more discussion on the way we're going to amend this RFP before it gets sent out by the manager?
May I ask a question, man?
Sure.
Liz, do you feel you could make that change to this RFP?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thanks, Liz. So I guess if we're going to take action on it, if there's no more discussion, we'll just maybe as well do a roll call vote.
This is on the amendment then.
Yes.
Cindy.
Yes.
Jay.
Yes.
John.
Yes.
Mark.
Yes.
Nancy.
Yes.
Kurt.
Yes.
And Bob.
Yes.
Okay, the amendment as worded, like Clerk Red is passed. Now we'll vote on the main motion, which is to authorize to issue a request for proposals to aid the community in developing a borough comprehensive plan. Any discussion on the overall plan as amended? Okay, seeing none, clerk call the roll.
Nancy.
Yes.
Bob.
Yes.
John.
No.
Kurt.
Yes.
Jay.
Yes.
Mark.
Yes.
Cindy.
Yes.
Okay, the Assembly has voted to authorize the manager to send out an RFP for the comprehensive plan. It passed 6-1 with Assembly Member Haverlick voting no. New business, item 14. First item there is a resolution of intent to lease 3,000 square feet of land at the Scalbay Turnaround property, placing terms and conditions on the lease for the land and exempting the lease from public auction. I'll entertain a motion to adopt this resolution.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved by Member Haverlick, seconded by Member Strand to adopt Resolution 14-07. Any discussion? I believe this is the lease that Mr. Murgis was talking to earlier, and he has the adjoining lease, and he was in support of it. Kathy?
I just wanted the Assembly to know what steps we take next. If you approve this preliminary approval that you're going to go forward with it. We'll get a surveyor to actually mark out the 3,000 square feet. Get a land value from the assessor, and that's what Mr. Berry would be paying his annual rent to us on, based on that assessed value and taxes. So once all that's done, once it's surveyed and we all know all that information, we'll come back to the final resolution where you actually grant the lease. It's going to take another 4 to 6 weeks to get that done, the survey.
Okay. Do you want to comment at all, Steve, on the please. Don't have to. So. Okay, so...
Mr. Mayor,
yes.
One question pertaining to this. What's the duration of the lease?
It probably depends. I'm not sure.
That one is different, Kurt, if you remember. The one we have with Mr. Murgis Island Ventures is different from all of our other tideland leases. It's on a five-year basis. It's a little different. This one will be developed the same way as Island Ventures. And it can't automatically renew. That's one of the clauses. Our other ones do automatically renew. The other thing that's contained in this lease down at Scow Bay is if there's any public need, immediate public need for that area, they understand they have to move up. And that is different from our other leases, too.
John?
I have a question for Steve. Steve, will you be expecting the borough to make any improvements, modifications, changes to this area?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
That was Steve Berry, the person that's applying to lease the property. He said no to Mr. Haverlick's question. Any more discussion? Okay, will the clerk call the roll?
Cindy?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
John?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
And Kurt?
Yes.
Okay, resolution 1407 passes unanimously. Okay, that brings us up to communications. We have a couple items that I will read today. One of them is questions presented to me or to the public, or it's not addressed to anybody, but it was in an email form, and now it's printed. This is from Dave Beebe, City of Kuprnoff. And this is in response to the timber sales on the island from the university and the Division of Forestry. And I'll tell you right now that I'm not personally going to answer these questions. If you can answer them in your own mind, if someone thinks they should take action against me for what I've done, then because I did something wrong, then just proceed. Number one, who was the mayor of Petersburg Borough representing in his support for a timber sale which impacts the entire borough and visiting public in a non-public meeting of borough and state officials prior to any discussion with the assembly, borough residents, and the city of Kuprnoff? Now, just one little thing I could add to that is these meetings take place all the time. Not that any major acts, people come and want to, you know, say what they're going to do on a certain project or something, even the DOT or anything like that. We have just informational meetings. Had the mayor fully apprised himself, this is question two, prior to his support of this timber sale, of the potential consequences of logging on unstable slopes as it relates to public safety and the fiduciary risk to the borough? Number three, on what basis could this support be justified without knowing the details of the detailed plan of operations? These details would not be disclosed for months to come, and after all, in those details reside the only valid source of informed public comment. Number four, why would the borough mayor, given the opportunity to be among the first of the representatives of the borough to be aware of the timber sale, choose not to participate in the official comment period of these timber sales? Number five, why would the borough mayor fail to disclose to the assembled public and assembly members in the only meeting within which an agenda item existed, which related to the timber sales and assembled impassioned testifiers, that the mayor had already supported the sales on their collective behalf without their knowledge? And like I said earlier, I mentioned in that meeting that I was representing myself, not the borough. I'm the mayor of the borough, I realize that, but it wasn't a position of the assembly. These are some of the immediate questions that arise here. There are more, unfortunately. They have to do with the city manager, Liz Cabrera, and others lending their support for under questionable authorities, given the potential consequences to the borough as it relates to public safety, fiduciary risk, and sustainable yield. Also, what are the quantified potential costs and presumed benefits to the borough justifying this support? Were it not for the arbitrary restrictions placed upon the public testifiers, there may well have existed an opportunity for public testimony to actually fully apprise the borough assembly members of the full range of these public concerns, which is an essential dynamic central to the functions of representative democracy. So there's that piece of communication from Mr. Beebe. The next one is from Papik Logging. Excuse me, I had to wet my whistle there. To whom it may concern, and this letter was dated May 27, 2014. Papik Alaska Logging Incorporated worked on Kuprinoff Island, Lindenberg Peninsula from April through November last year on the U.S. Forest Service Tonka timber sale and is currently working this site. It has been brought to our attention that there is a misconception that we are not supporting local business or contributing positively to the borough, the Petersburg community. Our company, as well as the timber fallers of Timberwolf Cutting, is based out of Craig on Prince of Wales Island, only a short distance south of Petersburg. We are not from out of state, more like neighbors than strangers. Hopefully the following statements of fact will clarify any questions of our integration or integration with Petersburg. Our operation involves a camp housing up to 24 employees and has employed 11 locals of Petersburg. Furthermore, we rent housing for two more employees from Petersburg residents, as does Timberwolf Cutting for their 18 employees. All our fuel is provided by Petro Marine, and all our freight is handled by Alaska Marine Lines and Lituya Fuel and Supply. We get over half of our food and supplies from Hammer and Weekon for camp, and the employees purchase individually as well. Pacific Wing primarily provides our flight service and sometimes Nordic Air. We are purchasing from Harborway Parts, Rockies Marine, Southeast Island Fuel, Piston and Rudder Service, Russ's Jugs, Cascade Towing, and Arrowhead, just to name a few. We stay at the Tides Inn, Scandinavia House, but it's Scandia House, and eat at Papa Bear's Pizza. We pay for mortgage at the Port and Harbor Department and for utility services from the borough and AP&T. In closing, I can easily track over $500,000 spent in Petersburg just by this company alone. That doesn't include wages paid to locals employed, the spending of employees for personal purchases, nor is it a figure contributed by Timberwolf Cutting, Viking Lumber Mill, or Columbia Helicopters, of who are all purchasing goods and services from the residents and businesses of Petersburg. This is over $500,000 from one single logging company, and we are not done with our season or the job in its entirety yet. So if there are any further accusations of logging on Kuprinoff Island using the local resources without contributing back to the community, I ask you to look at the facts before deciding the validity of such a statement. Thank you for your time and consideration. And this is from Kate Langford, office manager. And this is actually to contend a comment that was made at our last assembly meeting. It says, attached is a letter intended for the newspaper, and George Rice Sr. will take it to the Petersburg Borough meeting. Apparently a council member was stating that the only thing that the loggers on Kuprinoff contributed was going to the bar. This letter was to contend that comment. And I have no more communications. Does anybody else have anything they'd like to read? Okay. Assembly discussion items. Is there any recognitions? Okay. Seeing none, we'll move to the next item. Item 16B, assembly discussion on potential sales tax code amendments. At the May 19th assembly meeting, recommendations from the Sales Tax Ordinance Review Committee and others were presented. If the assembly wishes to place any sales tax proposals on October's municipal ballot, firm decisions need to be made in the very near future on what to bring forward to the voters. Any ballot proposal that requires an ordinance be referred to the voters should be introduced in its first reading, preferable by July 7th. So as you can see, there's a urgency to take action here. Sales tax recommendations and suggestions. A is require residency within the borough to be proven by PFD filings. B, increase the sales tax cap from $1,200 to $1,500 or $1,700. C, reduce the senior citizen sales tax exemption to apply only to WIC-approved groceries and heating fuel, which Sue Flint spoke to earlier. I guess you talked to the grocery stores, and they say it might be difficult to separate those taxes out. Eliminate the senior sales tax exemption in its entirety by establishing a sunset date. And E, consider implementing an excise tax on tobacco sales. So I guess this today we're going to just discuss what we want to put in ordinance form to bring to the assembly to vote on. Is that correct, Kathy? Is that the intent? So maybe I guess it will take a motion. I wonder if we should start with A and do one at a time for ease of progressing through this. So if anybody would like to make a motion on require residency within the borough to be proven by PFD filings, I'd entertain that motion.
Nancy?
Can we also add that the PFD language added to the ordinance will be retroactive for all cards?
If that is what we would like.
Okay. Yeah. So because it just says proven by PFD filings, but we need to clarify that it's all cards, not just new cards.
Oh, cards that date back.
That my card would have to be reviewed each year.
Okay, so we need to...
Then I so move.
Okay.
Seconded.
It's been moved by Member Strand, seconded by... Jay, did you make the second? Or I heard some of John. Member Haverlick. To require residency with the borough to be proven by all PFD filings. Is that kind of how you want it worded, Nancy?
Yes.
Okay. Discussion? And this is just to put it in ordinance form to bring it back before us for three readings to see if we want to put it on the ballot in October. Okay, I've seen no more discussion on item A. Will the clerk call the roll?
Mark.
Yes.
Cindy.
Yes.
Bob.
Yes.
Nancy.
Yes.
Kurt.
Yes.
John.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, item A passes unanimously, so that will be written up in ordinance form and presented back to us. Item B is increase the sales tax cap from $1,200 to another figure. They suggest $1,500 or $1,700. So I would entertain a motion to get that forward.
Yes. I move to increase the sales tax cap to $2,000.
To 2,000?
I'll second that.
Okay, it's been moved by Member Haverlick, seconded by Member Strand to increase the sales tax cap to $2,000. And that will be on this fall's election if it passes the three readings of ordinance. Any discussion?
Sure.
Jay?
Yeah. Obviously, I have my own opinions on all of these things, but since they're before us, I'm definitely going to support this because I think the voters should decide. This is going to be a community decision and one that shouldn't in the long run be up to us, so I'm going to support it here so that the public gets to make its decision. These are great questions to ask the community, and the public ballot's the way to do it.
Okay, any other comments on item B under the sales tax recommendations? Okay, seeing none, clerk call the roll.
Nancy.
Yes.
Mark.
Yes.
Kurt.
Yes.
Cindy?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
John?
Yes.
Okay, item B passes and will be presented back to us in ordinance form. I would assume at the next meeting, Kathy? Is that when we're our first one in July?
Yeah.
Okay, item C, reduce the senior citizen sales tax exemption to apply only to WIC-approved groceries and heating fuel. Entertain a motion to... For the sake of discussion.
The residency thing, that would include this so that the senior tax exemption would apply to residents who qualify for the PFD?
I would assume so. Don't you? Do you have, no. Kathy, do you?
Yes, that would be
a okay.
Prerequisite of sorts.
I so move.
Can I just ask for a clarification? According to what Sue said, then you would be exempting all groceries and heating
and fuel.
Right.
As well as
not just WIC fuel.
Right.
Okay. Yeah,
which changes the. But we can make them. Anyway, so you made a motion to adopt this, Nancy?
Right, as long as it's tied to the residency. Right,
okay. All right. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved by Member Strand, seconded by Member Wallhooter to adopt item C, reduce the senior citizen sales tax exemption to apply only to WIC approved groceries and heating fuel. So discussion, I guess sounds like we might need to remove that language, the heating fuel and WIC approved groceries if the stores can't.
No, just eliminate WIC approved.
Okay. Just say groceries.
All right. Okay.
So it's just indicating no hardware, outboards, things like that.
Right. Okay. Any more discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Kurt?
Yes.
Mark?
Yep.
Nancy?
Yes.
John?
Yes.
Cindy?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Okay, item C passes unanimously as well. Item D, eliminate the senior sales tax exemption in its entirety by establishing a sunset date.
So moved.
Second.
Been moved by a member Walhuter, seconded by a member Haverlick to eliminate the senior citizens sales tax exemption in its entirety by establishing a sunset date. And that will be on the October agenda potentially as well. Discussion.
What would be the sunset date?
That's so we'd have to decide that. Jay?
I guess my question ties into what Nancy said. How will we go about deciding said sunset date? Or what is the process to go about that to put on the ballot?
Well, I would see it as the clerk drafts up a ordinance, has the attorney look at it, presents it to us either late June, early July, and then we amend it as we go forward and put a date in it, or she could come up with a date. Any suggestions on a date? I mean, we could kind of throw out a preliminary one now, I would think. Kurt?
Mr. Mayor, I've been implicated in this thought process, so I was just going to pick the year I was born. If you were born in 1955, don't anticipate seeing it. So, again, I'm trying to be not self-serving. But you have to have some kind of a deadline out there so everybody knows that up to... I think that we should keep it into perpetuity for those that are already on it, you know, is what I'm getting at. I'm just saying there won't be any new, you know, people that can apply to it after a certain date. So, I mean, I just picked 1955. If you were born in the year 55, don't anticipate seeing that exemption. That was just my own personal thoughts on it.
Sounds like a logical number to start with.
To even simplify it even more, how about 2020?
There you go, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Well, you mean have a deadline date, so say those that are on it now in 2020, then you're no longer on it too?
Well, no. You can't apply for it after 2020.
Oh, okay, I got you. Okay. I'll go that direction instead.
At the age, wait a minute, the finance director has her hand up. She has something
well,
to
I
add.
Was thinking... How about the borough does not issue any more cards after January 1st, 2015? You just grandfather everybody else in. That already has one. So next year, if someone comes to town who's 70, they won't get a card because they did not have a card as of January 1st, 2015.
Okay, that's another option. So, Kurt?
I thought the further out you go with this, I mean, I'm not going to plan where I'm going to settle 7 years from now due to city sales tax exemption or $150,000 tax cut on my house. Grandchildren are going to be first priority, and health will be the second priority. So if you have it out a ways, you know, it gives people a chance to adjust, those that are, you know, planning on staying for the rest of their lives, you know, here. Mm-hmm. So. Anyway, that's all I was thinking. Kind of right. Like what they did with the longevity check. Yeah. They said that by a certain date, you know, and it was like 6 or 7 or 8 years out, they were no longer going to get it. And so that gave people time to prepare, you know, to set their affairs in order, I guess.
Right. Makes sense.
Jody and I were talking about it this morning. It's, you know, the elephant in the room, so to speak, is what will the voters approve? I mean, so, you know, you start looking at ages and say, okay, somebody that's 60 years old is probably thinking about retirement. So you may not want to set a date that excludes people who are 60. Okay, how about people who are 55? I mean, that's, you just start going down that road until you get to a point at an age where most people will probably vote for this. And I just think this bears saying, to offset, you know, this is not a money grab by the borough. The reason this is being talked about is that we're seeing an increasing number of senior sales tax exemptions. Our demographics are showing that more and more people are falling into this senior tax exemption. And while it's not a problem today, if those demographics continue 20 years from now, whoever's sitting in your chairs then is going to have a much bigger problem. So what we're recommending to the assembly is, in the community as a whole, let's try to solve this problem today so that 20 years from now, people following you aren't going to have this big problem. So that's why it's okay to grandfather this and pick a date and time that it expires. Again, we're not looking for more revenue tomorrow or next year or the year after that. This is a way to maybe protect revenue down the road so it doesn't get so out of hand that the borough can't continue to have a quality of life that people here expect.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes. Go ahead, Cindy.
Philosophically, I agree with eliminating the exemption, but I've heard from a number of people, let me get off speakerphone and see if that makes a difference here. Can you hear me?
Yes, fine.
From a number of people who say that having that exemption is important to them, and if we have reduced the senior sales tax exemption to just groceries and heating fuel, will that still provide enough revenue to the borough and give the tax break to folks that need it? I know that Wrangell doesn't have the senior sales tax exemption, but I'm a little reluctant to just completely eliminate it altogether. And so on that particular one, I think I would be voting no.
Okay, thank you for your input. Bob?
Over the last 10 years, I've probably done 3,000 or 4,000 hours of work for people both within town here and outside of freebies. And I can tell you, there are a lot of people who are in need around here, who don't have a lot of money. And I couldn't even begin to vote yes for this latter one. You know, we've already taken a step to reduce the other folks. One winter, I was in town here. It was one of the bad winters about 4 or 5 years ago. An individual approached me, came across the street. I was working on a house for a handicapped person, and they said, would you come over and look? They said, Sonny, and you know I'm not a Sonny when you look at me. Would you come over and help me? I don't have any heat in the house. So I went over and looked. The problem was, there was no fuel in the tank. The individual says to me, I don't have any money. My Social Security check hasn't come in. Well, I got the problem taken care of, but there are a lot of people in need here, just on the basics. And I have I'm with Cindy, I could not vote on this one at this point.
Okay, any more? Jay?
On this particular, the sunset one, as the youngest member sitting here, I don't think my opinion's relevant to be the broken record. I think it's important to let the citizens of Petersburg decide. So I'll be voting for it. I don't think it's our decision to make, and I would much rather put it to the citizens of Petersburg.
Any more comments? Nancy?
This is not to eliminate, for us to decide to eliminate it. This is to put it on the ballot.
Correct.
So
correct.
The voting population can...
And we'll have three readings to massage it, amend it, or whatever we want.
And I'm all
public,
for putting everything before the voters.
Public hearing on the second reading, so... Yeah. I might not agree with it, but I agree with like Jay to get it in front of the public and let everybody make the decisions. So, any more discussion on item D?
Yeah, I just came up with the word the wording just for the conversation's sake. You know, I mean, I am not going to die on this hill one way or the other. You know, we'll let the public decide. You know, hopefully we'll have a lot of input from the public, you know, when it comes to this particular item. Maybe I know for a fact somebody will come up with a better idea than mine. So, anyway, that just had to be said.
Any more discussion? Clerk, call the roll. Kathy?
Just for preparation's sake, it's going to be easier for us to prepare something, projecting it out, saying as of January 1st, 2020, there won't be any senior citizen exemptions.
Any new ones issued? Right. Or just any period? Well, that's a sales tax exemption.
If I may, I've got some ideas on that, Kathy. Yeah, okay. I think I can help with the language on that.
If you've got some alternatives, then we'll move forward.
To point of clarification, we're voting on using currently 2020 as language.
We're voting here. They'll just draft up the ordinance, and then we'll
get it, and then the assembly will debate this as far as those dates.
That's the first official document. We'll see.
Thank you.
Anyway, item D. If there's no more discussion, will the clerk call the roll?
Kurt.
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
No.
Cindy?
No.
Jay?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
And John?
Yes.
Okay, it passes 5-2 with assembly members Lagadakis and Lynn opposing it. The last item is consider implementing an excise tax on tobacco sales. So I'd entertain a motion to that. Nancy?
I'll move.
Okay. It's been moved by Second. Member Strand, seconded by Member Wallhuter to put on this fall's ballot, consider implementing an excise tax on tobacco sales. Discussion. Nancy?
I have long advocated for this, and I quit smoking when the state put that first extra dollar per pack on cigarettes, and I quit. And I think it is a deterrent to increase the cost. I've long advocated for the tax on tobacco products, and I think that additional tax should go into the general fund to be dispersed as needed from there. I don't think it should be earmarked for any department or so just my, but it should be on the ballot.
Okay. Any more discussion on the? Yes.
Yeah, I would, as Jay discussed earlier, and as the study showed, the bigger the deterrent, the better, the more impact. So I would suggest that excise tax be $2 per
pack. That's a starting point for the ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not only does Anchorage charge a tax on cigarettes, they don't have sales tax. And when they increased their tobacco tax the last time, there was such a shortage of funding that they were having a budget crisis. So it works. And whether people go out to the valley to buy cigarettes or whether they quit, I don't know. But Anchorage, when they last increased their cigarette tax, they had a budget crunch. So.
Okay. Kurt, did you want to comment?
No,
I thought you raised your hand.
I just wish I was as eloquent as Jay about saying I'll put this before the public and let them decide on it. Yeah. I mean, this is a moral issue more for me than anything. So,
Jay, do you want to comment?
Just a question. It said a pack of cigarettes. Are we also including smokeless tobacco in this? Mm-hmm.
Tobacco products.
Okay, all tobacco products. Yeah. Okay, I'm reading that. Yeah, then my only suffix should be, we should let the citizens of Petersburg decide.
Okay. If there is no more discussion, will the clerk call the roll on item E?
Nancy.
Yes.
Yes.
John.
Yes.
Kurt.
Yes.
Jay.
Yes.
Mark.
Yes.
Cindy.
Yes, and I'm signing off.
Okay. Thanks for participating. Okay, item E passes unanimously. And then there was an amendment to today's agenda to add two items
Thank you.
By Member Haverlick. The first one is liability at Banana Point, and I'm pretty sure he's talking about the borough's liability if there's landslides or injuries or whatever to the borough. Right?
Yeah, Mr. Perry, it was just a question. Knowing that that's a hazardous slope and it's in our borough, do we have any obligation? Do we have to put signs out if it's logged saying this may be a dangerous area? I don't know. So I just want to be covered.
Okay. Steve, do you want to respond? I know you did in the...
I can. I'll give you my opinion, but I want to clarify it up front. I'm not an attorney nor an insurance person. This is just past experience and a lot of years in the business mm-hmm. world and such. The borough does not own the property being logged. We're also not the contractor doing the logging. Therefore, our liability is exceptionally limited. It's a state-owned property. They have their own liability insurance policies. The contractor, I'm assuming if they're following state purchasing rules, and I'm pretty sure the university would have a whole section in their contracts on liability insurance and bonding and issues related to public as well as even personal liability related to the employees that are on the job site. So. I do not feel the borough has any liability, but I'm not an attorney, nor am I an insurance person. Okay. So if the assembly wanted a more informed decision, you would need to send this to the borough attorney and have them research it and provide an opinion to you.
Steve, you know, the reason I ask is because, you know, the recent problem at Oso, the, you know, some contribute that to logging a hillside. Some say that people were told you're not allowed to live there, you know, or build there, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. And, you know, since we were informed that this is a hazardous area, you know, that's why I'm questioning this. And, you know, when the road got wiped out in Wrangell, I don't know who paid for that. And the watershed in Cake, I know Uncle Ted ended up getting federal money of $1.3 million to replace that. So that's why I'm wondering who pays.
I have nothing else to say other than what I've said. Okay. It's just in the sense that
well, that was my only concern.
We don't own the road. We don't own the land. The contractors are not hired by the borough. We don't own Banana Point even. I mean, that's state facility. So reality is my guess is the attorney's going to come back and say if there is any liability, it's very, very limited. But that would take the attorney, not me. So, but I would, the assembly would have to ask us, and we could send it to Jim to research.
So the other discussion item was ability to tax logging. And I don't know, but Steve, you answered this question with John once before. So
same kind of issue. I'm not a tax expert or a state law expert on this one in particular. If you look at who owns... Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, ma'am.
Back in the day, in my youth, didn't they call where logging took place? Wasn't there funding to schools called stumpage?
Could have been, and maybe that's what Secure Rural Schools is replaced,
and
since there is no logging.
Now there's the rural schools funding, and that comes from logging. It's associated with logging somehow.
I can't speak to the stumpage, but I can speak to the Secure Rural Schools. Secure Rural Schools, or timber receipts, you'll hear us call it, is a replacement for the logging industry in a sense. It's a federal program that's pretty much under threat. And, you know, if it's here 10 years from now, even 5 years from now, I'd be surprised. But it is to replace the value the community's got from logging. Primarily, I think, in residents and sales tax, meaning a lot of people were employed in the logging industry.
Do we know why they took the stumpage away?
I have no idea. Bob, would you
know? I wanted to make an amendment to what Steve said. It included all resources, so that it included mining, recreation, everything. So there was a portion of those fees came back to the area of which they were made in. Didn't necessarily have to be a Mitkoff, but it had to be here on the Tongass. Yes.
Thank you. Okay. And, the issue of pure sales tax, I can kind of speak to. If you look at what property is logged, it's either mostly state and federal owned property, which is not taxable anyway. The second piece of that is it's also wholesale. So if, you know, Kyle goes out and cuts a tree down and sells it directly to me for firewood, then it can be taxed.
Yes.
But if Kyle is cutting a tree and selling it to Mark or Chris, who's not here, to process in a mill, it's not taxable anyway. So sales tax doesn't appear to be a solution from a taxing perspective. There's too many exemptions that don't apply. Nancy's question about stumpage, though, is potentially relevant. You have places that do, you know, depletion allowance. I mean, there's other types of excise or taxes, like a depletion tax, that potentially could be done. But now you're up against state and federal law that I cannot offer advice on. I mean, that is definitely an attorney and probably a fairly lengthy investigation by the attorneys. So if you wanted us to look into it, we'd have to turn Jim Brennan loose. And I can't really give you an estimate on how expensive that would be, because I think he would have to look at some federal laws on can we apply that to, for example, logging on Forest Service land. That's a federal issue. State law would be any of the, you know, mental health or university land trust. It's easier on privately owned land, but there's not a lot of that gets logged. So anyway.
Right, thanks. John, you had another comment?
Or? Yeah, the reason it seems sensible to me, and it doesn't take much with me, but it's the, you know, the oil's on federal land, fish has a tax on it, and the Secure Rural Schools funding is going to go away. So when expanding our borough that is going to be covering, you know, 83-plus area that we have now, there's going to be probably mining opening up, a lot more timber industry, and it would just be really nice for us to get a piece of it. And, you know, like the oil and the fish, and it seemed logical.
Yeah, but that again, that would take, that's a research project for the attorney. I don't believe Jody or I have the expertise to delve into that, those two, or that one. Am I wrong, Jody?
So I guess if there's an assembly member that wants to put it on the an agenda and take action on it to see if we want to spend that kind of money, attorney fees, we'll have to bring it up at another meeting.
There is a lot of case law on this whole issue in the lower 48 counties that you'd have to get into. I could, you know, talk to the generalities, but in essence that you're barking up a tree if you're trying to tax some of those because you got comparative taxes, and I don't want to get into the details between feds and the locals and the state here. So, but yes, there's a lot of case law on it.
Yeah, it's beyond my expertise.
Okay, John, are you satisfied with the discussion we've had on these issues?
Yes, sir.
No other comments or discussion by the assembly? Then I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Okay, it's been moved.